That's from you, then.
And welcome to Keld Abbey Talk Radio. I'm Ven Rule, filling in for Crow, and with me this episode is Dark Hiram.
Yo, yo, yo! How's you guys doing?
Due to existing commitments from all of our other cast members, we are the only two on tonight. But tonight, we do have our very special guest, who we talked about last episode, Kathleen Chassie.
Hi! Oh, see!
That would be you.
That would be you.
Yeah, that would be me.
That would. As you remember me talking about last episode, Kathleen is one of the big people making moves in the Star Wars costuming community as of lately, but I'll let her talk about it. So we have a couple questions for you here, Kathleen, that we're just going to go over in just interview format as standard with all of our guests. First off, how did you become involved in the Star Wars community?
Oh, geez. Well, we're going to have to go to a time long, long, long ago. When I was wee.
In a galaxy far, far away?
Yes, in a galaxy far away called Texas.
Yes.
Because I'm not in Texas right now. But, well, my parents are kind of nerds. my dad liked Star Trek, my mom liked Star Wars, and they did get along, got married, and had me. And so I, you know, because I grew up, they raised me, I liked nerdy things, and, it was more involvement with Star Wars because my mom's more gung-ho, let's go do stuff. So we joined
We slept outside for the first release of the show.
Oh, yes, we did.
Re-release of the movies.
We joined a Star Wars group, SWASA, and they became a family, and we started doing charity with them and going to conventions as a group, and then those conventions is where I met on the edgy. And it kind of spiraled out of control.
And so yeah. your big involvement through the Star Wars community has been through Peter and Angie Mayhew. And so
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Right on. I mean, they're very lovely people. I mean, like I've said in the past episode, I mean, I know them too from here in Texas and Star Garrison being based out of NTX. Just absolutely wonderful people.
They're amazing. They're also quite fun to be around and
yes.
be with.
So. Oh, I've listened to a couple of Angie's conversations at the dinner table. She's hilarious.
Very colorful.
Very colorful, to say the least. Right on. So the big thing, as some of our viewers know, but we're going to restate this, is that with you being in the Star Wars community, there's been the recent Life Day for Kathleen. How did the origin of that come about?
Well, that's another long story, but I'll try to keep it moderately short. Well, I have cystic fibrosis, so that's kind of like where it's a genetic disease where your body pretty much overproduces mucus everywhere. So it's kind of like a frog. But, like, the mucus is on the inside instead of on the skin on the outside. It's gross. It's gross. And mostly it affects lungs and kind of drowning in mucus. So my lungs kind of decided to drown me further.
Ooh.
And that's kind of, yeah, it's gross. It really, really is gross. It got to the point in November of last year that it almost took my life. I was on two forms of life support. I was struggling, but I wasn't going to give up. And so Uncle Peter and Auntie Angie and a couple of our friends got together and they made a website, Life Day for Kathleen. And it went from there. And, you know, it's Life Day is the Wookiee thing where, you know, Wookiee debt. I don't know if any of you guys know that.
Oh, we of course they do. Trust me, we know.
Oh, I know. I'm speaking to fellow nerds, so I have no worries about that.
Vague idea.
Really? Only a vague idea?
Hashtag sarcasm.
Oh, I'm not very good at
I'm terrible at sarcasm too, so.
Yeah, so that's where the whole Littlest Wookiee thing came into play too, and you know, we asked Uncle Peter and Auntie Angie, because of course I couldn't speak, so I couldn't roar like a Wookiee, but they had more of a larger community and outreach than we did, so we asked them to roar for us. We asked Uncle Peter to roar for me, and all we needed was one doctor and one yes, and through the many connections, it was like a tree. It just sprouted from the roots and just went off, and just the right leaf started saying, "Hey, I'm here." And that was that doctor said, "Hey, you know, I'm at UCLA. I heard about your story. I got a call. Let's do it." And it was a friend of ours, J.R. Stosis, am I saying that right? made the call, and that was through our connection through Peter, and it's weird how everything aligned just perfectly. If I have never made that connection with Uncle Peter and Auntie Angie when I was 10 years old or something, I wouldn't be here today.
Well, that's amazing, really, because I mean, we were in the last episode, we were talking about how wonderful the Star Wars community brings people together, and how there's a very big shared humanity with it, and I would like to say that that's a very big example in your case, and we're astounded to be hearing your story here, because that's probably one of the greatest examples I've ever heard of Star Wars having a shared bond with people, and I mean, it literally saved your life.
Oh, yeah, it does. And, I mean, that's not to say other nerdy communities don't, but, like, it's just huge. A lot of people don't realize how important us nerdy community people are. I mean, we do a lot of good. We get together, and when we have a common purpose, we can get a lot accomplished. And, you know, some people don't realize that, and you know, they don't realize they can actually reach out and ask for help, and we will do our best.
Right on. I mean, that's totally what it is. I mean, everything we pretty much do in the big Star Wars costume community is helping out all these people. I mean, raising money for charity and all that. So I mean, it just helps out in different ways.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
You said something that caught my attention, and I'm curious. You said that doctor. So am I to understand that you had seen several doctors and you weren't getting the help you needed?
Kind of. I mean, it's a huge...
Do you want me to tell them?
It's a huge...
The way it's put... This is her mom. Sorry. Because she was really out of it when all of this was happening. So she doesn't, she knows the story. She doesn't know exactly how we got to the point where we did. It was basically in the transplant community, the way that it's done. Well, she knows now. But the way that it's done is that clinic that you're in or that hospital that you're in that sees that you need that transplant, if they don't do transplants, which she was at a medical hospital, a Brook Army medical base, and Texas, San Antonio, they don't do transplants. So what they had to do was they had to actually ask other transplant community clinics and stuff like that within certain, you know, area. They were trying to stay in Texas so that we'd be close. They have to ask them if they think that she'll be a viable candidate and would they like to try and give her a consultation. So that's how that starts. And after about, I'd say the first 2 weeks after knowing that her lungs were really failing, they started to reach out and look at it as a spiral starting from San Antonio, Texas, working your way out to all of the other clinics and all the transplant centers. And so when they reached out, each hospital would respond to their request of a possible consultation or a possibility of a candidate for transplant. And they all felt that she was way too sick to have it done. By the time we heard that she was really way too sick to have it done, they were just saying,
they gave up.
That's all there. We can't really do anything. And we sat on that for a little bit while she was, you know, there and everything like that. We sat on it for about a couple of days and we thought about it and we said, you know what? No, that's not going to, we need to reach further out. We're not just doing Texas. So my husband said, usually that the machines that she's on would be a bridge to a transplant. Well, they were saying this bridge will lead nowhere because she was not viable for a transplant. She wasn't strong enough. She wasn't healthy enough. And so my husband put it to the doctors as, well, we're going to build this bridge, and the bridge is either going to make it to the other side or it's going to crumble under us trying. And so that's what we relied on, and that's when I reached out to Peter and Angie and asked for them to roar because that's what they could do.
Yeah, so they pretty much just kind of went, oh, well, we tried everywhere in Texas. Oh, well. And it was, I kind of caught one of that. And in my drugged stupor, I was like, screw that. I'm gonna, you know, live.
Well, I mean, that's a great attitude to have.
They had no idea who they were dealing with. I mean, I don't take no for an answer. I really don't.
Someone a little bit too strong.
Again, the whole, you know, it's better to ask forgiveness than permission. It's kind of the same thing, you know. Just keep beating them until they're warned. They'll do what you want eventually.
So that leads me to a second question then. What kind of a timeline are we looking at here? Like, when did you realize that there was something wrong to when you ended up in the hospital needing to get treated and they figured out what was wrong with you to the point that you had...
I was dying?
Well, I guess
to put it a little bluntly.
Well, I mean, I think I was trying to go with have Peter Mayhew help roar for you, but I'm not going to lie. I was having a brain fart. I was like, Peter, and I'm wanting to say Peter Cushing,
despite...
but I know it's Peter Mayhew, so, but yeah, to that point, and then when they were able to help you, you got to the doctor that said that they're going to do a transplant, I guess you said, and then to where we are now, about what is, like, what's the timeline that we're looking at?
So, it wasn't downhill my whole life. So, I had a pretty good childhood until I hit my teens. That's where my lungs started, like, going downhill. But it wasn't really, really bad until...
September?
No, till like, we started noticing, okay, my CF is progressing about 3 to 4 years ago, but it got really, really bad about a year and a half ago. It was a whole mess with doctors and all that stuff. I was admitted once, and then I was fine for 9 months. Now, that's like really, really rare for me because I usually went in for tune-ups, I guess that's what we call them, every 3 to 4 months. So for 9 months, I maintained my, you know, my PFTs to the same level, which like it, layman's terms, 40-45%. And I did that for 9 months. Then all of a sudden I got really, really sick. And I was like, okay, I need to go in for a tune-up. And I got out, and then 2 weeks later, it came
this
back.
This was in October.
That was in October. And then 2 weeks after that, which led into November, I went in and they were just like, okay, you're just really, really, really sick. We got to like go hardcore with these antibiotics. We got to try antibiotics we never tried before or, you know, you were quote unquote allergic to. We got to retry them. And they did. And it was kind of working, but I wasn't getting significantly better. And then all of a sudden, right before Thanksgiving, I woke up 2-3 days later.
Mm-hmm.
And I was super pissed because I missed Thanksgiving. I missed all that food.
I brought you.
And I had a trach in my throat. And I couldn't speak, I couldn't eat, and I couldn't even drink water. And I was just like, of course, my body would choose the best time, the day before, or the day of, where I can eat glorious food to crap out on me. And then I didn't get that glorious food until like 3 months later. And that was like in, that was going into,
In November was when.
January.
Yeah, November is when they put the trach in. And then on December
27th, I got my lungs.
Yeah, on, right. In the early December, we called Peter and Angie. They gave her approximately 10 days because they said they couldn't find anybody.
And then I heard that and I was like, screw that. I'm going to live longer than that.
That's when we said, that's it. We're calling Peter and Angie. We need help. Yeah. And so we called Peter and Angie, and then four or five days after that, all of a sudden we got phone calls. They come running to us saying, we have phone calls from LA. They want your records. They want to do a consultation. We were like, okay, let's go. And they're like, well, I'm like, get her on a plane. Let's go. You know, what question is there? So they were I think they were just beside themselves that LA was reaching out because that wasn't even close to where they were going.
Yeah.
Well, they said that. They were very surprised after hearing all the no's.
Yeah, that they got a yes. They
said maybe.
Yeah. So we went on the premise thinking that's when the military got the C-130, flew her out, and that was on December 12th.
11th.
12th, yeah, in between there. And and so what happened was we were under the premise that we were going just for a consultation.
And
consultation takes usually 7 to 10 days.
Because they make you do tests and they do all this crazy stuff just so you can, for them to consider to put you on the list. Just 2 days after being there, they're like, by the way, you made the list. And we're like, but I didn't do any tests. And they're like, you made the list, sweetheart. And then, they told us that I got the highest number.
Oh.
So the higher the number you are, the more chances and the quicker you'll get your lungs.
Right.
Or whatever organ that you need, which I got like what, in the 90s?
92.
92.
Yeah, and they do it from between like
60
to 100.
Yeah.
So again, the higher you are, the better.
The sicker you are.
Yeah, basically the sicker you are, but not too sick. the better. And so, but like, they're like, okay, we're gonna talk to them and be like, we're gonna try to get you on the list. And we're like, I'm not gonna have to do anything. And they're like, no,
we know you can do it.
And so they did. And the next day they're like, you made the list. Here's your number. And we're like, cool. And then 2 weeks after that, on the 26th, while my dad and my mom were celebrating my father's birthday, they were out having dinner. They got a call saying, we got lungs, you know.
Come on.
But they still had to check if they were good for me and everything. But they like to have everything prepped and ready just in case it's good to go. They could just whoop, put me in, and then whoop, I'm out, you know, that kind of thing. And
were actually there. We were as parents, very rarely do you get to be, because they were preparing. Usually you sit in the OR for hours to make sure that those lungs are, or organ is viable. And so you don't get to see as parents, we were not prepared to see her for a couple of hours simply waiting to find out if those lungs are okay. Because she could have gone down there and they said, no, the lungs are not viable. And sent her back up, and then we'd have to wait some more. But we actually walked her down to the OR and actually was right there when the nurse came in and she said, it's a go. And we were just like, oh my God. And everybody is just
so excited. Yes. I remember I flipped out because I did not want to let go of my wolf stuffed animal, who is affectionately named Minnie Alec, which is my husband's name. And he has a stuffed wolf named Minnie Kaplan. I would not let them take it away from me. And they don't usually let you bring in something when you're going in for major surgery. And they were just like, we gotta go. Let her keep the stuffed animal. Because I was not letting that go. I was like, no, not letting
go.
Well,
it meant a lot to you. It meant a lot to you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was funny because I did just recently find out that stuffed animal went on quite an adventure without me.
They lost it.
They lost it, found it, put him in a tube, to, you know, those things that suck the little thingies up.
Like yes. The bank.
At the bank. And apparently he went to like two different floors that were not the right floor. And I was just like, oh.
He went on a big adventure.
Without me. It was over it feels like a long period of time, but it was so quick. Like, snap your finger. At one moment, I was sitting up and talking, and then the next moment, I was waking up from, a 2-day coma.
Oh, wow.
Which should have been a food coma.
From Thanksgiving.
From Thanksgiving, but, you know.
If you haven't realized yet, her world revolves around food.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I really don't.
Elevators. I mean, I was just like, oh gosh, they told me I was gonna die in 10 days. That ain't gonna happen. There's way too many video games, nerdy stuff, and food to be consumed by me in the future. There's
the
no way I'm
going. Things.
The important things, indeed.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh.
And my dog.
Oh yes.
And my dog.
I love animals. I absolutely love animals.
Where's my cat?
Yeah, where is your cat, by the way? He has two. How many cats do you have?
I have one. I'm not going down that road yet.
I've already went down that road with dogs, so.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going there.
I have a Husky Lab mix and a Great Dane Lab mix. I am good. Oh, he's so stupid. He's so cute, though.
Aww. She was told, so to tell you that more of the timeline, she actually was told that, you know, you're going to have to recover. It's going to take you a while. You'll probably be in the hospital about a month.
Yeah, they were like, a month. You're going to be in the hospital to recover for a month. And that's what they told me. And I was just like, no, I'll be out in 2 weeks. And they were like, whatever you say, sweetie. And then 2 weeks later, they come in and they're like, we're going to release you. And I was like, yeah, I told you so. And so
it's between 14 days and a month, depending on the person.
Wait. And so they gave me some painkillers, and they were like, okay, we're going to wheel you. I'm like, screw that. I'm going to walk. And they're like, where are you going to walk to? I'm like, all the way to my hotel.
And that's where you see the I Got New Lungs video.
Yeah, yes. So that's the I Got New Lungs video.
Yes.
And I walked. I mean, with the help of the troopers and the invader and Artemis, do not start.
That's her dog.
I'm sorry, that's my dog.
Oh, right on.
No Artemis.
Oh, well, yeah. Tell us about that. The troopers that led you out of the hospital, that was a big thing on social media.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think it was a big deal, but I guess it was.
That video, I saw that video at least like 5 times over different channels.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh. I can't believe it I guess I could kind of say it went viral.
Yeah.
It kind of went viral amongst the community.
Yeah.
And that's really, really weird.
That was an awesome video. That was me walking backwards the whole way.
Oh, that was you?
I tried to do it front ways and it just didn't work right. So I said, you know what? I'm going to walk backwards and record you guys because that's the easiest way to get you guys actually walking. So through Westwood in LA, I'm walking backwards the whole way to the hotel.
Yeah. It was in
the dark.
I'm proud of her. She didn't fall. She didn't bump into anybody. I mean, it was really cool. I mean, despite me getting new lungs and walking all the way to the hotel, which she did was amazing.
So you're more proud of your mom than
proud. I'm a little proud of that moment.
Well, that's
good. And I'm proud of myself too because
you should be.
Vader and the troopers weren't the ones holding me up. I was holding them up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's something you can't tell in the video.
The roads were so uneven. The sidewalk was so uneven. There were, like, small potholes and stuff. And there was this one point where Dupree,
who's Vader,
he kind of slipped a little and, like, swayed. And I just kind of grabbed him and I just kind of went, okay, you're just... You know,
I got
you. I got you. You don't worry. I got you, bro.
My new apprentice.
Oh yeah, and I'm this like 65-pound little tiny just got new lungs and still has like
wraps
for where the the incisions were made, still slightly bleeding on them. Oh. Saying, hey, you're gonna fall. I'll catch you. Don't worry.
That she loves her wrangling. She really does. Yeah, she's very good at it.
Come on, little birdies, come on. No, come on.
That's why in the video you see her actually stop and see a little boy and make sure that the little boy gets to meet the troopers. She didn't care about all the adults.
No, well, there were a couple times where, there were adults, and I was like, yes, I know this is nerdy. Yes, you should take pictures.
But she made sure that the little boy actually got to meet Vader and everything.
Yeah.
And that was sweet.
That's awesome.
I feel like it's not every day that you get to see, like, troopers and Vaders just walking down the streets.
Yeah.
It is around you.
Well, I'm used to it. But I know how others feel when they're randomly walking around and they're like, hey, wait, there's a cool nerdy thing just right there. I want to be with that nerdy thing. And it's just, like, it's compelling, and you just have to go to it. And I know that feeling.
Yeah. Oh,
so understand. You know, spread it and spread the joy and share the joy.
Right on. Absolutely. Well, with that, I know that was the 501st, and I did see, like, in Walt's Trooper Factory and a couple other places, they were doing, like, patch runs for you. Was there any big group that really helped you out the most?
The 501st.
501st,
and the Mercs. The Mercs did an awesome... I'm not sure, maybe you're familiar with the gentleman that made the Wookiee braid.
The big auction. I was advertising that like crazy. It was like, you gotta take a look at this. This is big.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was what kickstarted really everything for us being able to actually be here and help the Peter Mayhew Foundation
out.
It's
like super expensive here. Like,
not
even joking, bro. It's not even joking. Well, now I'm talking like a Californian. My God.
Well, us Texans, we're so used to it being cheap down in Texas, and you get out to the big California state, and you're like, oh my gosh, everything is like.
Why is milk $5?
How much is that cheeseburger?
Yeah.
Like, milk is like $5. I'm like, I paid $3.20 or something at HEB. What?
Yeah, so it's like at Whataburger, it's like $9 and you get half a pound of food.
Yeah.
And here you for $9 you get small tofu.
Oh, what do you miss the most about Texas right now while you're over there?
Oh, I miss this one.
What is that?
Steak?
Steak today. Oh, he ruined the steak.
I didn't.
He ruined the steak. And I'm just like, I can't get a decent steak here. I need to go back home.
Oh, yeah.
I miss Texas a lot. Like, I miss my friends. I miss family. It's just...
Wait to be...
Everything's cheaper. Everything... I know the area.
Can't wait to do our first troop with the 501st.
Oh, gosh. I just can't
the Star Garrison.
I can't wait for a lot of things.
So...
In the Rebel Legion. Yeah. Yes. Her first and stuff.
Well, I'm gonna be the one to make the shameless plug right here. You need to make a Merc.
Yeah. I was gonna say, where's your Mando armor? Because you're in the Mandalorian culture. There's a thing called Mando Carla. It's what a Mandalorian recognizes another individual that has like the fighting spirit, the will of the Mandalorians. And you you told them that you're gonna walk out. And for you to have the drive to fight against. The illness and everything.
And still fight.
She never used a walker either. During all of her times that she stood up, she used it once after the transplant to stand up, and then she put it to the side.
I said, it's in my way.
It's in her way.
Slowing me down.
She was the only one. They're just like, she's not going to use a walker. And I'm like, she doesn't want it. There's no way she's going to use it.
And they forced me to use it. And I just kind of, I didn't throw it to the side. I threw it as much as I could. You know, being so weak. And
I had to carry that stupid walker around with me because they were like, she may need it. I'm like, she ain't going to want it.
I was like, I don't want it. It's slowing me down. I'm going to do this. You know, of course I complained, I don't want to do this, it hurts. I still did it though.
Yeah.
So you're still in California right now?
Yes, unfortunately.
So are you going through like recovery or what is it that's going on right now?
Well, right now, I finished my physical therapy.
Today.
I graduated today. We had a whole graduation thing.
That's
with
awesome.
The cape and the hat. And a certificate. My dog was
and
there.
Music.
And music. My dog was there. It was great. But after I finished my physical therapy early, I believe.
Yeah.
And a bit earlier than they expected. And they also have flat out told me that I'm recovering a lot better than they expected, too. So I will be having a bronch on Monday, which will help them determine whether or not I'm good to travel.
Light travel.
No, just travel in general. And which means I'm getting closer to coming back to Texas, which my goal right now is May. And not early May, like maybe late May. Late May. I'm aiming for late May. I want to get there just when the summer hits in Texas.
Oh,
well, I want to enjoy my pool.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. I was about to say, why? Because why? Even as a Texan, I hate Texas weather.
And I get to wear shorts and tank tops, okay? I am tired of being, it's a little chilly.
She's cold here.
I don't know. I want to be under the beating sun and feel... I was stuck in a hospital room.
Lots of sunscreen.
Well, yeah, tons of sunscreen. But I was stuck in a hospital room for like 3 to 4 months with no natural sunlight or smell or anything. It was just like, as my dad said, mole people.
No one escapes the fortress of the mole.
Child.
Yep.
But I want the sun. I want, maybe not the breeze, because that's kind of chilly, and I don't do well with chilly or cold, but I just want to swim, okay?
Hey, that's fair. I love swimming.
And go home, where they know how to do barbecue and tacos. Like, all they have is Taco Bell here. They don't have authentic Mexican food. Or
they got, like,
carne asada.
They got that weird Calimex that's, like you know, it's all got
tofu
all the weird...
Tofu and avocado.
I love avocado, but it's, like, it's not guacamole.
It's not guacamole.
You've got a new pair of lungs. Do you know where they came from, or classified or something?
Well, right now it's not classified, but right now we don't know much. All we know was it was female and she was in her 30s. Mm-hmm. And that's it. We won't be able to get into contact at all with the donor's family until a year after. And even then, they kind of screen the letters and they black out any information.
But they could never use your name.
Yeah, they can't use my name because they could just easily go to Facebook.
Your name's
too
unique.
Yeah, and so it's kind of difficult. The only way we will ever get to know the donors or the donor's family or anything is if they reach out after that year in that initial letter, because when it comes to transplants, they use every part of the body. So, like, every organ that someone needs. So, someone could have gotten her heart, someone could have gotten her liver. You know, I obviously got both her lungs. So, you know, But they'll be getting tons and tons of letters if they were able to use those organs. And so, you know, it's up to them if they ever want
to. Sometimes they don't reach out to the other people. They just want certain things like the heart or the lungs.
Yeah. Some people can be very specific. Some people don't want anything to do with it all because it can be painful, you know.
Understand.
Walk around with something that you used to, you know, that used to be in a loved one, and it can be very difficult. So that's why we didn't even know about any of this. We were completely like, you don't know what goes on with, you know, transplants. All we knew was you get new organs. And unfortunately, someone has to go for that.
Right.
And that's all we knew. So right now, I'm hoping when it hits a year, I do hope that one day we get to meet the family of the donors. And I mean, I want to take them out to dinner. I want to take them out on night of the town.
Hear you talk.
You know,
that's a big thing. Just
breathe. I want to thank them, and I want to honor, you know, the loved one that, you know, I got that their organs from. I mean, it's just, it's very difficult.
Well, it's a beautiful thing.
Today.
It can be a beautiful thing. I mean, you hear those stories all the time about people who have developed great relationships with the family of a donor.
Oh yeah, and I hope one day that'll, you know, it'll be like an extension of our own family, you know. But
Phillips is.
Mm-hmm. And my uncle had leukemia, right? And they got found a bone marrow donor, and they have
a living one,
which is really, really cool. And they have a great relationship with that donor's family.
Right on.
So I hope to have that someday. Because I like having huge families. So just to add more to my family is great. It's just great.
Absolutely. I mean, it's always a big community. It's always a big family with the Star Wars community. It never ceases to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So something I was thinking about earlier is you mentioned tripping with the 501st. Do you have an approved costume of the 501st or Rebel Legion?
Not complete. Not complete. They accepted her with a partial complete costume.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Shadow.
Oh, scout or trooper?
Scout.
Oh, yes, like a patch. Patch.
Yes, just like on the patch. Her number is TX65651, and there's significance behind that.
The 6-5 is, it's for cystic fibrosis, which when we're little, you know, some kids can't say cystic fibrosis. Heck, even sometimes I can't say it. So we say 65 roses. And that's where the whole rose thing, yeah, it works. And,
I like it.
Yeah, and so that's what they chose to do. And they added double the number, and then they put the 1. Because, you know, I'm number one.
So hopefully we'll have more TX6565s with a 1 or a 2. Maybe more cystic fibrosis family will come out and become, you know, 501st members.
That'd be great. You could start a whole group.
Oh, yeah, it'd be great. I have my own little army.
If you could see her eyes light up as she said that.
I'll rule over the world.
Kathleen Snoke.
Empress.
Good.
Good. Let the cupcakes through to you.
Then of course, oh, that's so awesome.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
And of course, she's got the TX as her number, and
yep,
as
Texas
we've heard, she's very Texas proud.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. We're all Texas proud. Every one of us from Texas.
Texas is best state.
Go ahead.
So, with your new lungs, do you, like, can you feel a difference? Like, is there a conscious difference? Like,
huge difference. Just huge difference. It's not filled with, like, mucus.
Well, that's good.
You can actually feel that. So, when you have cystic fibrosis and, you know, the mucus in the lungs, you kind of feel like a crackling sometimes when you take a breathe in and breathe out. Like, you know, okay, you know how when you're about need to blow your nose and you're trying to breathe through it, and sometimes it makes that crackling noise that yes. nobody else could hear, but you can hear and you can feel, and it's just like, it's just like gross, and it's just, that's how it feels when you're breathing with really bad CF lungs. It feels like that, and it's all the time, constantly. Sometimes it's worse than other times, and it's just, a constant congestion that you can never get rid of, and it's annoying. It's tedious to get the mucus out, and it hurts sometimes.
And it gets infected.
And it's a whole lot of gross.
Yeah. It's like having really bad pneumonia in your lungs, where it's just
exactly.
Oh, okay.
All the time, or bronchitis constantly, and it's just it's annoying. But with the new lungs, everything feels so clear. Everything, I could breathe. Oh my gosh, I'm a normal person. It's just like, it's weird because now I'm like, I have a little cough and it's not like the, I can't even imitate it anymore. Like I used to be able to cough on cue. Okay, so sometimes, yes, I did use my CF to get out of things that I didn't and I would like cough and like do this
mainly school
cough. Mainly school. Man, I don't feel well. Put the thermometer near the light bulb a little bit. Get it a little bit to 100, and then, oh, Mom, I have a fever. Yeah, and, you know, lick it a little bit. So, you know, she thinks I did put it in my mouth. But, you know, it just, I can't even imitate my old cough anymore because I can't. I mean, I'm not saying I've tried. My cough is like, and I'm like, is this how normal people cough?
Yeah.
And then I caught a cold. I did get like a small cold while after I got out of the hospital, and it was a normal cold. I had like a slight fever, and all I needed to do was eat some chicken noodle soup and lay down, binge watch Scrubs, and fall asleep and wake up, and I was okay. Right. And I was just like, is this the thing that people, normal people, complain about that is hell? It's like, this isn't hell. This is like, I don't know, a free day.
Wild inconvenience.
You know how, like, people are like, I have a cold. It's the worst ever. A good day. Yay. And I'm like, I'm cold. And I want to party. I was like, I don't get it. What is this cold everybody dreads? I've had this cold. I don't know what it's about. Because I'm so used to like getting a cold and it escalating past to what a flu is. And
try being the parent of that.
Yeah.
I don't feel well. Can we go out? What?
Yeah, it's just,
she learned to live with it, is what it was.
Yeah, but now I'm just like, right now I just have to stay with the top, but not my tongue on my nose. My nose is stuffy all the time.
It's allergens out here.
Yeah, allergens. No. I need to go back home.
Yeah.
Where there's no allergens, because everything is dead.
Yeah.
So, is there a risk that you could get the what you had before?
Oh, I can't pronounce yes. One of the risks, one of the bad things about having CF is when you do get a transplant, not only do we face rejection through transplant, like the normal transplant rejection stuff, but the CF genes could reinvade the new lung. That's why usually they do double lung transplants and not just one, because if they left one CF lung in there and brought in a new lung, the old CF lung and the stuff in that could easily invade the new lung. Easily. And I'm putting that in very layman's terms, And that's why they usually do double lung transplants, because they don't want anything from the old lung at all. Like, even the DNA, they don't want it. And so that's what the anti-rejection medication is. They kind of, from what they explained to me in kitty terms, they put a smoke screen on my lungs, and they're like, "You're not here." But so my lungs right now are, the new lungs I got are ninjas.
Nice.
They're ninjas. They're fat ninjas.
Will there be a point where you don't need to worry about your lungs rejecting?
There'll never be a point where I will always worry about rejection.
And it's
a constant thing, and that's one of the things that they don't really touch up upon when they talk about transplants and stuff, like in normal civilian areas and like just in general. Like, it's not common knowledge where
you're still at risk constantly.
Like, it's like with anything else, you know, you could take your medication on time every day, and you could still get rejection.
Right.
But the fortunate thing is, the longer you last, the lower that chance. So, yeah. You know, but it will eventually happen. My lungs will reject one day. I'm hoping many, 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 many years down the road. It better, or I'm going to have a serious talk with my mom.
Listen here, lung.
But you know what? I had to yell at my lungs, my old lungs, every single day. It's like, listen, you don't do the dishes, I'm gonna have to evict you. And, you know, eventually my lungs were like, well, ma'am, I'm not gonna do crap. And then, you know, I went into a coma for 2 days. No, I will face rejection eventually. But I guess I could take solace in where they'll catch it, and I'll have time to get my affairs in order.
Right.
As compared to what happened to me, you know, this time. You know,
absolutely.
Everything happened quick. I couldn't, you know, be like, okay, this is what I want to do before.
She's told she can't make a bucket list anymore, though.
Yeah.
No more bucket lists.
But, you know, at least I'll be given time.
Right.
To adjust to me dying, rather than, oh, by the way, you're dying. You know, cool.
So that, I guess, gives me another question. Why was it such a, I guess, surprise that it was becoming a fatal situation? Wasn't there a point prior where they could go, oh, you have this, you might want to start looking into that?
I was getting to that point. So when you hit a certain percentage for your lung capacity, PFTs, I'm not going to go into the whole medical mumbo jumbo, but I was around 45, 46 lung capacity, and usually around 30% or lower is when they start talking to you and start getting the ball rolling for lung transplant. The unfortunate thing about having CF and many other lung diseases is you could be fine one moment, and then in the next, quick as a snap, not fine. And that's what happened to me. I had a 9-month grace period where, you know, I was doing fine, I was doing great, and then all of a sudden I plummeted so fast.
Right.
And it happens all the time with CFers, and unfortunately a lot of CFers don't get their lung transplant. Or someone will wait for 3 years, or I knew someone who, you know, was in their 30% for 3 years before they got a lung transplant.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that it happens. And then I've known some that were waiting on a lung transplant that died waiting, or died on the table while they were getting one. Because it was, well,
Well, we're glad that you definitely made it through and you got your lung and you're able to have this conversation with us.
And we're glad and we're happy for the impact that you helped make in the community. You brought a lot of people together.
Oh, I mean, it's still mind-boggling for me.
I totally understand. Well, we're probably gonna wrap this up in a few minutes. I know y'all have a busy schedule. One last question I do want to ask y'all is there anything you're excited for, geek or Star Wars community coming up recently? You excited for any big news in the near future?
I'm gonna look forward to my first walk. I'm gonna go to
Bakersfield.
Walk. Also. We're going to be doing Disneyland sometime next month.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right on.
Of course.
One of the 501st is helping us get into that.
Yes. One of the 501st members is helping us with that. And it's going to be really great on Trooper Tuesday.
Probably.
Yep. And it's just...
Sweet.
It's so much... Like, as much as I don't like being here in California, at least I'm taking solace that there's stuff to do that, you know, I would have never been able to do. So, you know, I'm taking it in strides that, you know, hey, at least I get to do this.
Right on. Well, yeah, there's always perks where we go. I mean, out there in California, there's a lot of cool things to do.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're about pressed for time at the point. We're about done with the time at the point. We're pretty much near the wrapping point of the episode. Well, what we certainly want to see you do is we thank you first and foremost for you and your parents being here on the show. It's been absolutely wonderful.
Well, no, thank you.
Our pleasure.
And very educational because I did not know about you until Finral started talking about it. And I mean, normally I usually keep my ear to the ground when it comes to our community, but I've been kind of out of touch myself lately. So I'm really glad that we were able to sit here and talk with you and your family, because I didn't know about any of this until just all of it till now. So I'm thankful to be able to have this conversation and meet you guys.
Family.
Hi.
Absolutely.
You're now a little Swookie supporter.
Yay.
Right on. Well. Oh. Well, we thank you so much for coming on here, and we do definitely want to make the request. If you ever feel like it, there's always the opening for making a Mandalorian. There can never be enough Mandalorians.
Well, you might be hearing from me.
Right on.
Get my little Wookiee hairs into everything that's Star Wars.
Oh, awesome. Daniel would love that.
That would be awesome.
Her buddy Daniel Logan would absolutely love that. That would be like the topping on the cake for him.
Oh, he would. He loves the Mandalorian merch. Oh, he loves everything. He embraces Boba Fett a lot.
Oh, yes. He does. Like he came to visit me when I was in the hospital. So.
I remember that.
I call him baby boy.
I've been calling him big brother since I was 10.
Yeah, since you were 10, like 10 and
up. Okay,
yeah.
A lot of things happened when I was 10.
Yeah.
That's when life began.
I met him a few years ago and I got to party with Daniel Logan. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, he's an awesome dude.
Oh, yeah.
He really is. I think he's so awesome. Right on. Alrighty, so I guess we're going to sign off. Once again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. And once again, that was Kathleen Chassie and her wonderful parents. And I'm Ben Rule and Dark Hero.
Yo, see you guys next month.
Alright, everyone take care. Now stay classy, Coruscant. Comes from the... Wait, where's it come from again? Comes from... Where? Oh, Lord, that's disgusting! Don't try blue milk. We're so sorry.